This is Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston, and you're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM in good old McLean and surrounding counties. And we're broadcasting here, of course, on St. Patrick's Day, but people probably will be listening to it after St. Patrick's Day. So at any rate, anyway, I'm wishing everybody out there a happy St. Patrick's Day, or else a happy belated St. Patrick's Day, whichever does apply. I think some people might be listening to us tonight, and so it will still be St. Patrick's Day. And if you're listening tomorrow, we can say belated, but at any rate, it's St. Patrick's Day weekend. And there are some things that are going on, and next weekend, the 24th, there will be a pancake breakfast at Applebee's put on by the Knights of Columbus. And that pancake breakfast at Applebee's will be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. So again, that's on March 24th, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Applebee's. So get out there. You can get, I'm sure, tickets at the door, or check with your Knights of Columbus representative, and you can get tickets that way as well. So it'll be a great breakfast. Everybody will have a good time. And it's a nice place to meet for a nice pancake breakfast and coffee and whatever else that you might want to do. I'm here with my wife, Lynn, today.
Hi.
And she is saying hi. And also, I want to remind everybody that we do have our podcasts on our website, CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Again, that's CatholicSpiritRadio.com. So you can get podcasts of the show. And you can find out a lot of other information on our website. Be sure and visit that website. If you want to make a donation, it'll tell you how to make a donation there. So it's a good place to tune into and listen to Catholic Spirit Radio. We're on 24/7, EWTN broadcast 24/7. So there's a lot of great shows on there. So tune in to 89.5 or 92.5 FM, and be sure to listen to Catholic Spirit Radio and all the things that are going on around the county, around the diocese. We'll have that information for you. Today we're going to talk a little bit about some of the religious turmoil that's going on in our country. Before we start, I'm going to ask my wife if there's anything that she wants to preface our program with. Lynn?
Yes. Coming up next weekend, the 24th, is Palm Sunday. And that begins the most holiest week of the year. Check your bulletins for all of the scheduled masses and confessions and so forth in your parish. And be sure you get there. You know, you have to make a good confession and receive communion at least once a year during the Easter season. The Easter season goes from Ash Wednesday until Pentecost. So you got plenty of time, but don't put it off.
That's a very important point to make, Lynn. And we are, during a period of Lent here, coming in pretty quickly to Holy Week. And before long, it'll be Easter. We're coming up here on spring. A lot of events are happening all at once. If our weather doesn't reflect it, it probably soon will. At least we are getting a little bit of moisture, and we certainly needed that. And we've had a lot of snow on the ground for, I shouldn't say a lot, we've had snow on the ground for a long time this winter, but we really haven't had a lot, and we haven't had a lot of moisture. So those are all good things, and we will be soon moving into spring, and it won't be too long before the outdoor season will be starting and people will be getting out into their backyards, barbecuing and other things. So a lot of things like that are coming up. I do want to talk today. I was mentioning that we're going to talk about some of the religious turmoil that is going on in our land, and I'd like to start out the show by talking about a book, Strangers in a Strange Land, and it's written by Archbishop Charles J. Chaput, and he is the Archbishop located in Philadelphia. And the subtitle of the book, Strangers in a Strange Land, is Living the Catholic Faith in a Post-Christian World. So Chaput himself, one of our archbishops, is saying that we are now living in a post-Christian society right here in America. And when he says strangers in a strange land, he's not talking about the world in general. He is talking about right here in America. So we're going to talk a little about this book, and I'm taking it from a book review by Carl E. Olson, and that book review appears in Chronicles, a magazine that's more of a secular magazine, actually, than it is a religious magazine. But nevertheless, the people that print out, publish the magazine, a lot of them are Catholics, and they do have a lot of Catholic-Christian issues in the magazine, and it gives it a very interesting review. And so we'll talk about that and use it as a launching pad maybe to talk a little bit about actually what's going on in America especially, but in the world also in general. And Shapu starts out the interview with Charles Colson saying, "I'm a pastor, not a scholar," he says. And he said, "A bishop's job is helping people get to heaven and not to Washington." So, but he goes on to say, "In fact, since the death of Francis Cardinal George of Chicago in 2015, and this is the Carl Olson actually talking here, Shapu has taken the lead as the most erudite, well-read, and deeply thoughtful of American bishops." And if people are not familiar with Cardinal George, he passed away here, I think, within about the last year or so. I'm not sure.
No, it's been longer.
Exactly. It hasn't been longer than that, Lynn?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, time goes by so fast anymore.
It does.
It just seems like it wasn't that long ago. I was standing in the lobby of Epiphany Church and talking with Cardinal George for a short period of time. I was very, very impressed to meet the man.
Yes, he was a very impressive man. Very small. I was very surprised. He's short, little, thin person.
Yes.
But he's powerful,
yes,
he has to say.
He was powerful and a very, very good scholar as well. And he was, I think, a little bit more pessimistic than Archbishop Charles Shapu. And I think Charles Shapu is becoming a little more pessimistic since that time. But at that time, there was a article by Cardinal George that was printed in the Epiphany Bulletin. And I know I have it somewhere at home. I don't have it with me today. But that article talked about the fact that Cardinal George said he would die a natural death probably in his bed. And he said in the future, it won't be too long. He said that it could be that an archbishop like himself, or a bishop, rather, of the Catholic Church that was true to the religion, might find himself dying in jail. I mean, that was pretty hard to take at the time. I mean, to look at that and think, in America, could that happen? But I think there was a lot of truth to what Cardinal George said. So when we talk about this today, I want everybody out there to understand this isn't just coming from Lynn and myself or our opinions, but we're talking about some of the thinking that's going on among very, very thoughtful and Catholics in a very high position in this country are starting to face the fact that there have been some huge changes in America and in the world as well. And that's what we're going to talk about, living the Catholic faith in a post-Christian world.
That seems to be such a shock to a lot of people, I think, that the first time they confront that idea, we're in a post-Christian world, it just, they don't know how to take that. They don't know, well, they don't know where they belong, but this is, it's kind of hits you as a surprise, a wonderment or something. What happened?
At any rate, the book reviewer, Carl E. Olson, says that Shapu has a gift for getting at the heart of things with just the right degree of attachment, combined with the right sting, and in Chaucer's words, in other words, short, to the point, and lofty in his theme. For instance, this remark in response to my question, and that's Carl E. Olson's question, about how Christians in America should be strangers, here's what Shapu says. He says, "The not-so-good news is that times have changed. The past 60 years has transformed almost every aspect of American life. Christians are waking up to the fact that the country they thought they knew isn't the country they actually live in." And what I would like to ask here is, when we say the country they thought or we thought we knew, should we have been more aware? I mean, we have gone for so long under this idea that there's such a thing as religious freedom and that it is possible. And in some of my shows here in the past, I've challenged that idea, saying that every single country has to decide the principles upon which it will be based. That is, what are the principles upon which its laws will be based? And those principles are always religious. And in that sense, there never was, and there really can't be, any such thing as religious freedom. And there are some books out on that as well, and I think I've gone over some of that before. But anyhow, again, Christians, as Shapu says, are waking up to the fact that the country they thought they knew isn't the country they actually live in. And my contention here, and you can comment on this, Lynn, is that maybe it really never was. Maybe we were sort of lulled into thinking it was that way because for so long we've taken our Christian roots for granted. And among our lawmakers and everyone else, there was a de facto, that is, by just fact alone, Christianity that sort of prevailed. And lawmakers especially conformed to that sort of consensus. We did have a consensus, even if we consisted of different denominations and Catholic and Protestant. Nevertheless, there was sort of a prevailing Christian ethos or ethic, and everything conformed to that. And so it was very easy to talk about tolerance and to talk about religious freedom in an atmosphere like that. But as time has passed and our country was really not based, its laws were not based on any specified religion, those things have changed. And so there is a growing animosity toward some of those Christian ethics and principles that is prevailing more now than it ever did before. And so that religious freedom that we thought that we had may have never really existed, except simply by a sort of loose consensus that is now disappearing. And I think maybe that's what's happening. We were lulled into this false idea that there can be a religious freedom, this idea that we don't have to choose, that we can continue to believe in all kinds of different things, and it really doesn't make any difference. I think that's pretty much in America what we had. You could, might turn this idea over. I think the French writer and philosopher Alexis de Tocqueville, when he came and visited this country, saw this. He said in America, and that was back in the 1800s, or maybe the late 1700s, I'm not sure exactly when he visited. It might have been the late 1700s or the very early 1800s. And he said in America, religion is a mile wide and an inch deep. And what he meant by that was that everywhere, he said, in all the churches, they talk about morality and, you know, getting along with your neighbors and being moral and that kind of thing. He said, but they deliberately never talk about doctrine. And really, I think we were lulled into thinking that doctrine isn't that important, that we don't have to worry about doctrine, that people can have different doctrines and still get along. I think that is not the case anymore. And the idea that we could have somehow this secular government that's somehow apart from religion was never really workable, and it isn't workable now. What do you think about that, Lynn?
Oh, I think that's true. I don't, you know, people really didn't realize what was going on. I don't think that people in this country ever realized at the founding of this country, the founding and the idea of religious freedom was not what we thought it was and what we were taught what it was. It was there to protect the state from the religion, not the other way around. And, you know, we've been lulled into this. Everybody believes sort of the same thing, the Christian, Judeo-Christian thing, ethics and so forth. But that's changed. Well, they ask our own kids how the freedom they had when they were young to come and go. It's not there anymore. And their children don't have it. They have no idea what they're talking about.
I think one of the first cracks in the dike goes back a ways. It was the conflict between the Christian principles of this society, the common Christian principles, and Mormonism. I mean, the Mormons insisted on the right to polygamy. And, of course, they were actually driven out of the United States and traveled out west, which across the Mississippi River at the time, you were no longer in the United States. You were outside the United States. You were in the territories, maybe, but nevertheless, it was not the United States. In fact, actually, when travelers came back from those areas, they'd say they're going back to the States. So that's how it was. And they traveled out there to have their religious freedom because the law forbid them from having polygamy. And, of course, once the United States caught up with them in the sense that those areas also became part of the United States, polygamy was ruled against the law, and they had to end polygamy. And so this idea, you know, it should have been a signal that there really can be no such thing as religious freedom, that you have to decide the principles upon which your laws will be made. And those principles, you know, now have changed. We had also this idea of secularism, that somehow secularism was a non-religion, that it was neutral. Now we're beginning to find out that's not the case, and that's not the fact. That secularism is a religion in its own right, and there's an article here we'll try to get into a little bit by Mary Eberhart, and in that she talks about the growth of the secular religion. But it shouldn't be surprising to us. I mean, people, primitive people in other countries would have inherently understood that it would have been puzzling to them, the idea that somehow or another you could have religious freedom, or that you could have a country based on non-religious principles. They would have known that every country has to decide the religious principles upon which it will act and which it will be built and which its laws will be based. And I think that problem is catching up with us, and we'll get into that just a little bit further as we mine Chaput's book here, Strangers in a Strange Land, through the book review by Carl E. Olson. In the meantime, we're going to take a break, so stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Join Catholic Spirit Radio in a prayer for vocations.
God our Father, you made each of us to use our gifts in the body of Christ. We ask that you inspire young men and women who you call to priesthood and consecrated life to courageously follow your will. Send workers into your great harvest so that the gospel is preached, the poor are served with love, the suffering are comforted, and your people are strengthened by the sacraments. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM. We're back from our break. We've been talking about a book by Cardinal Chaput, Archbishop Cardinal Chaput from Philadelphia. And the book is entitled Strangers in a Strange Land, Living the Catholic Faith in a Post-Christian World. I might say that a title like that probably even 10 years ago or 20 years ago would have probably been unheard of. And it would have been, it would have been sort of startling. It may be even a little bit startling now. But again, Chaput says, Christians are waking up to the fact that the country they thought they knew isn't the country they actually live in. And he says that's especially ironic for Catholics because we've spent the last century trying to fit into the American mainstream. Now that we finally made it, the place is under new and even less friendly management. And my question is, and you might want to comment on this, Lynn, is should we have been trying so hard to fit in the American mainstream? I mean, should we have known that Americanism and Catholicism were not exactly compatible? And I think one of the scholars back at the time, John Courtney Murray, who had a difference between Leo the 13th, Pope Leo the 13th, and himself. He was one of the leading scholars insisting that America and Catholicism were very, very compatible, and Pope Leo the 13th disagreed, and he thought that there were inconsistencies between Americanism and Catholicism. And at that time, probably everyone would have taken the side of John Courtney Murray and been, you know, in disagreement with Pope Leo the 13th. Maybe now, finally, Leo the 13th lived in the late 1800s into the first part of the 20th century. And but now I think more and more people may be coming to the understanding that Leo the 13th was right. But at any rate, should we have spent, as Catholics, all of that time trying to conform to America?
Probably not, but on one hand. But on the other hand, you got to look at people were settling then. Much of this country was barren of people. And the people that came were from all different places around, you know, England and Switzerland and the Dutch and so forth. They came over to claim their religious freedom. Well, not everybody can have religious freedom under one government. I don't see it.
Well, I agree.
And you got their land titles, their social titles. Everything is wrapped up in that. And one thing to remember, that many of the Catholics that came from wealthy British aristocracy. And they were given the big land grants and stuff. And when they did put down the laws that the bishops or the priests could not function in the colonies, this was overlooked in these manors where these people lived. It's something to keep in mind.
Yes, it is. But Chaput goes on, and speaking, you know, of Mormonism, and I shouldn't say Mormonism, but speaking of the clash between the Mormon concept of marriage and the other Christian concept of marriage being totally different, and the Mormon concept of marriage being outlawed in our country. Again, here is Chaput, and I don't know that if he's making the comparison between these two, but it's very apparent that there is one. He says a profound watershed in the transformation of our country, and in, of course, the hostility more and more toward Christianity, and especially Catholic Christianity, he said, occurs with Obergefell versus Hodges, June 2015. He's saying, not just because it licensed same-sex marriage and did away with the traditional understanding of marriage, but because the court changed the meaning of family by wiping away the need for the natural relationships, husband and wife, mother and father, at the heart of these institutions. Marriage and family are now what the state says they mean. But I don't know, you know, he says marriage and family are now what the state says they mean. But if we're going to be honest with ourselves, wasn't it always that way, Lynn? I mean, what, you know, the fact is that the Mormons were forbidden from practicing polygamy. And now it's made legal to practice same-sex marriage. I mean, it seems like these watersheds are turning over the issue of marriage, but they signal a lot more than that. But
they certainly do. They signal a lot more. But it's very telling of what they are signaling. When you start to think about it and put it in its proper place, what are they talking about? What actually are they talking about? They are talking about changing, abolishing the old thought about what marriage and family was. They're changing it for their own purposes.
They are.
And it's going to be a permanent change if they have their way.
They are, but the idea that this is something new, I think, as Chaput suggests here, it would certainly, you know, it seems so you would take it for granted almost that it's so. But if you really look back to what happened with Mormonism, there was a signal back then. The fact is that the state, it can never be neutral. This idea that somehow the state, that secularism can be neutral and that the state can be neutral and it can stay out of religion, simply isn't true, because most human behavior is religious. And the fact is marriage is very much centered around religion. And, of course, the Catholic Church, I'm sure that Leo XIII would have said that the Catholic Church has the authority to determine what marriage is, because marriage is something not determined by humanity but determined by God. You know, this comes from the very nature of what we are as a human being and what marriage should be. And it is not something that the state should have a say-so over. But the fact is I think even Catholicism in America back at that time accepted that the state should have a say-so over it, because back at that time, I don't think anybody could ever foresee that there would be that much of a rift between the state and Christianity. No one ever dreamed that this would take place. And everyone would have been in agreement that the Mormons somehow were a small minority and that they were wrong and that they couldn't be allowed to practice this. And there wouldn't have been much of a ripple, really, in society over this. It would have been a blip on the radar screen, because 99% of the people would have disagreed with the Mormons. And so we would have had a very strong consensus as to what marriage should be.
And that certainly would happen. 99% of the people agreed that that should not be. But previous to this, to the Mormons, what about Henry VIII? And that whole uproar there over marriage and so forth. That's what started it, as far as I can see.
That's a very good point. So you have three instances here. Henry VIII was talking about, you know, can you be divorced? And the church was saying no. And the state overruled the church. So we can see that there, when the state and the church, when the state and religions don't agree on principles, there is a problem.
That's right.
And we're back to that same thing that I asserted. Every single state has to decide the religious principles upon which it will be based. And whether those are going to be Christian principles, Catholic principles, or are they going to be some other religious principles? Secularists proclaim that they're somehow neutral and apart from religion, but it isn't true. They have their same religious beliefs. And now it is that marriage can be something outside of what Christianity defined it. And we're finding that the law is on their side, and yet the law pretends that it's not making a religious judgment here. It's pretending that it's just taking the facts and it's just handing out a privilege or a good to everybody equally.
I think that's pretty notable to say they are handing out. What right do they have to hand out what we believe?
Well, since we've always had marriage, you know, being treated specifically and with special privileges under the law, then they're saying that people who proclaim a marriage between the same sexes have the right to have those privileges from the law the same as everybody else, but it's clashing in effect with religious principles, so you just can't get away from this.
It's clashing with it. But does religion have to change its point of view and its dogma and everything to quieten the things down and to get along with the state? That's the question.
Well, the question is what will the state religion be? The idea that we proclaimed in this country that the state would be neutral and that there would be no state religion. I proclaimed earlier on programs that the idea of a separation between church and state is an illusion. It's ephemeral. It doesn't really exist. And then when you have that idea that there's a separation between the church and the state becomes the church. And isn't in effect that's what the state is doing? If it declares what marriage is and defines it, even though it denies that it's exactly doing that. It's just saying that it's handing out privileges. But the fact is that in handing out privileges, it handed out privileges before based on religious principles. It defined marriage as between a man and a woman, and it defined it as being between one man and a woman. And when the Mormons tried to buck that law, they either had to leave the country, and when the country caught back up with them, they were told they had to stop their practice. So the state, in my, like I say, the state has always had a say-so over what marriage is, and in fact, the state has always had a say-so over religion. We're just finding out now with this so-called idea of separation of church and state that the state, in effect, does become the church. And whatever the state's principles are, they become the religious principles of the day. And I think Strangers in a Strange Land, the very title of the book, that we somehow are waking up in this strange land, this America that really isn't the America that we signed up for, is simply putting an end to that disillusion. That it's been maybe a period of 200 years in which it's been unique in the history of mankind, that somehow or another our de facto religion and our state laws were pretty much the same. But it seems as if it's turning out now that that's no longer possible, and that we do have a secular religion that is coming more and more in conflict with the Christian religion. And then, of course, when we say Christian religion, we don't even know what we mean by that for sure, because we have been living in a country in which there have been thousands, 35,000 different Protestant sects, for example. And then we have the Catholic religion, which they all came from in the first place, and we have differences between them. And so things never were as simple and as cut and dry as they seem to be. That's one of my points. What do you think about that?
Well, I think you make a good point that that's the way it is now, but that's not the way it should be.
But the question again is how should it be? This is the problem we're running up against.
There should be a separation between what we believe and practice and the state stepping in and saying, this is the way things will be.
The question is that possible? I think that's what we're butting up against.
No, I can't see it being possible. We have to get along in the world that we're in. We're going to have to do some adaptation, but not giving up our beliefs.
Let me move from, I'm going to come back to it again, Strangers in a Strange Land, in this interview with, not interview, but this review of the book by Cardinal Chaput, and go here to another magazine, First Things, which is a sort of ecumenical magazine. It's really a Catholic magazine put out by Catholics. Father Richard Niehaus was the sort of founder of it. And the R.R. Reno is an editor of First Things Now. And here is what they have, some letters to the editor, and a Protestant wrote in, this Corey Moss wrote in, and he was asking whether or not First Things is still dedicated to its commitment to religious freedom. And he's saying that this R.R. Reno, the editor of First Things, agreed with and gave some praise to about a 5 or 6 page article written by someone, and I don't have the author in front of me right now, but the article was saying that Catholics should start reaffirming the idea that the Catholic Church and that the Pope and the Magisterium still retain the authority that they once had, and that is to speak for the morality of governments around the world and speak for the morality of our government, and that they have the authority to be listened to and followed. And that's called Catholic integralism, meaning that in effect, what this author was saying is that other Christians in our country, since they are, in effect, people who left Catholicism, ought to be reintegrated back into Catholic teaching and Catholic dogma. And, of course, this set up, you know, raised hackles with this writer who was writing in. And he says that that person has been an outspoken supporter of Thomas Pink's thesis that the Catholic Church still maintains a right, and when prudence permits, a duty to make use of the secular arm, that is, to make use of the state in prescribing, and he's not saying prescribing, he's saying proscribing, that is, curtailing and controlling the free exercise of non-Catholic Christians. This is what this man is charging. And he says, this thesis has also been articulated by Pink himself in the pages of First Things. And he's going on to ask Reno, he says, it seems that you are approving of this. And in view of a certain pattern that seems to be emerging even in the pages of First Things, perhaps the editor would like to reassure me that this alleged Protestant paranoia is not actually warranted. And he's saying that, you know, that some Protestants are getting paranoid over this. And Reno replies that, oh, you know, that shouldn't be what you're worrying about. What you should be worried about is the fact that all religious freedom is being encroached on by the state. But then again, didn't the state encroach on the freedom of the Mormon? What I'm trying to get at here is, you see the confusion that is starting to arise here?
Certainly.
Who should be the spokesman for Christianity is a question that's emerging again.
Right.
And so is it possible for everybody to be a spokesman or nobody to be a spokesman? I mean, if it's just left to that, will the secularism or somebody else step in and they'll set down the religious principles by which the country has to run?
I think, unfortunately, that is probably what is going to happen in the view of our history of our country.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break here. We'll come back to this a little bit. They're doing some rethinking at First Things, and I'll bring that back in here in just a minute. But you can see the turmoil that is building in our country, and people, you know, are no longer taking for granted what they took for granted before. At any rate, we'll stop here and come back to this. So stay with us. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.
Hi, I'm James. I'm 13, and I listen to Catholic Spirit Radio. I'm into technology, so my dad took me to see the Catholic Spirit Radio Broadcast Tower. It was a very cool experience. When I listened to Catholic Spirit Radio, I learned stuff about the church and the faith. My family listens a lot when we're in the car or just at home. Sometimes they go to the website to get movie reviews or just to check the community calendar for teen events. I think other teens would really like listening to Catholic Spirit Radio too.
Tell your teens about 89.5 and 92.5 FM, the free Catholic Spirit Radio app, its Facebook page, plus the website at CatholicSpiritRadio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio is a valuable resource for teens as well as adults.
Thanks for supporting your local Catholic radio station. Donate online at CatholicSpiritRadio.com.
Hi, this is Bob Johnston. You're listening to Being Catholic right here on Catholic Spirit Radio, 89.5 FM and 92.5 FM. We're talking about a review of a book written by Cardinal Chaput, Strangers in a Strange Land. And we'll continue with this, and we're talking a little bit here about how there are all kinds of rethinking going on the part of secularists, on the part of Christians, on the part of Catholics, on the part of Protestant denominations, on exactly what religious freedom means, and on exactly who has the right to decide and set down religious principles for the country. We're talking about the waking up to the idea, this is what Chaput says, that what we took for granted, the religious freedom that we took for granted in America, and the America that we thought was built on religious principles itself, is today becoming an America that we no longer know. And I'm saying maybe all of these things were actually there all the time, sort of waiting to happen. and maybe the whole concept of our founders and ourselves has been a little bit delusional in the idea that we can get away from these. I was pointing out earlier that people in earlier times in other societies would have understood that every society has to come out and lay down the religious principles upon which is on which it will its laws will be built on, its the religious principles upon which its laws will be based. They would have understood that. I don't think that we, as advanced as we think we are, have understood that for the last 200 years and thought somehow that we were free from all this turmoil and free from having to decide these things, that we somehow had devised an answer to all of this. And that answer that we thought was so pat is turning out not to be that case at all. And so this is what we're talking about. And at the same time that we're talking about, R.R. Reno, the editor of First Things, is assuring a Protestant in a letter that a Protestant writes, being concerned that the Catholic Church is asserting its authority to lay down the law for other people. And he's saying, are you still believing in religious freedom? And Reno, on the other hand, is assuring, of course we do, and that it's actually the secularists who are stepping all over our toes, and we have to do something about that. At the same time, he is saying, we are doing some rethinking at First Things. Some of us wonder if John Courtney Murray was too sanguine about the congeniality of the American project of Catholicism. And I was talking about that earlier, that John Courtney Murray was one of the Catholic leaders of the early part of the 20th century who was insisting that America and Catholicism were perfectly compatible, and that he was in conflict with Leo XIII, who said, no, it wasn't. And people back at that time would have sided surely with John Courtney Murray against Leo XIII, and now maybe Leo XIII is starting to be proved right. And so, on the one hand, Reno is telling this Protestant friend, no, we're not trying to in any way decide what our religious principles should be, and we aren't insisting that we have the authority to do that. But at the same time, he is saying that maybe Catholicism isn't as compatible with America as we thought. So you can just see the turmoil that is coming up here. And I am saying here, in if you can understand me, it's getting a little bit hard to hang on to all of these themes. What I'm saying is that maybe this whole idea, that the reason all this turmoil is happening and this confusion is happening, because we keep going back to this idea that somehow religious freedom is possible. And I'm saying maybe it's not possible. Maybe it never was. Maybe every society has to decide which principles its laws are going to be based on.
I think that's pretty true. I don't know how you can develop a culture or in a country without having some stable basis of what you're going to do, and having in mind we have to have some kind of guidance here. We don't have that here.
But Reno goes on here, he goes on to say, progressive culture warriors are clear about their intention to give sexual freedom priority over religious freedom. Yeah. But the fact is didn't religious freedom have priority over sexual freedom when it came to the Mormons from the very beginning of this country? Only we never noticed it. And I'm not trying to take the side of polygamy or take the side of the Mormons or take the side of anybody in this case. I'm just saying, wasn't this an indication of the cracks in our thinking about religion in the first place in this country, that somehow it was all compatible with law and order? We really didn't have to decide on which religion is going to lay down the religious principles or what religious principles are going to be, because we thought somehow we could have a country based on secular law that was apart from religious principles. And aren't we beginning to understand right now that there's no such thing as any kind of law apart from religious principles, that as soon as you say, do this and don't do that, you are acting religiously? In other words, human beings are by nature religious and can't act any other way. How could we delude ourselves into thinking somehow or another there could be a separation of church and state, or a separation of religious and state? That's what I'm asking here.
Well, actually, you're asking a question way above my pay grade, tell you. But it seems to me, just from a common person's observation of what's going on, the secular is taking over. And we're going to have to put down some guidelines and not give in. Because this can't be. Look what happened in Rome. It's happened over and over and over again to people that keep going back doing the same things over and over and over again. And they end up the same way. Absolute disaster.
Well, again, even in Rome, there was this conflict between the Christian religious principles and the Roman religious principles.
Exactly.
So, and we thought somehow or another we resolved that and solved it.
But you see, there is good in people.
And the secularists are saying they don't want Christian religion principles. They don't want the law to be based on Christian religious principles. But the fact is that secularism is becoming a religion because it is a religion. And it isn't becoming a religion because the secularists are somehow deliberately turning it into a religion. It always was, because there's no such thing, and what I'm trying to say here is there's no such thing as secularism in the sense that somehow it is neutral toward religion or can set itself apart as non-religious. It can't. And if it's the dominant power, that is, if it has the power of the state, which it does, because it claims that it's neutral and therefore somehow or another it can have state power without imposing religious principles, it is a contradiction in terms for it to even say this. And for us to concede that is simply to concede that secularists will be the people who have the authority to set down the religious principles. My point, again, is that we should have seen and we should see now that it is impossible for anybody to proclaim that they can set down laws that are neutral of religious principles.
I have to agree.
So the question is, our society is going
have,
into...
You can't have...
Is what shall they be? And then here, I guess we can get back to Strangers in a Strange Land by Chaput and talk about that a little bit more. But before we do, I just want to go on here on right after this letter that is concerned, a Protestant's concerned about religious liberty, is the Catholic Church trying to lay down principles that would be against, let's say, Lutheranism or against some type of Protestantism. I think the honest answer, Murray tries, Reno tries to sort of straddle this by keeping a foot in both camps. And I don't think that's possible. I think Murray, to be honest, has to say, yes, Catholics feel that they do have the right to lay down religious principles, because if they don't lay them down, somebody else will, and the state will lay them down, and there will be no such thing as a law without religious principles. But then the Lutherans could say, well, how about us? Well, don't we get to lay down those religious principles? And then, of course, there's another letter here referring to the 1999 Joint Declaration of the Roman Catholic Church and the Lutheran World Federation. That joint declaration declared that there really isn't any difference in the doctrine of justification by faith alone and the Catholic doctrination of justification by faith. That the Lutherans and the Catholics really mean the same thing, they just said it in different ways. But the fact is that it seems to be like it's starting to fall apart. It says the fact that more conservative Lutheran denominations repudiate that declaration now, which some of them have actually dubbed the Augsburg Concession, meaning that somehow the Lutherans conceded to Catholics in this issue. So it seems even there is some division starting to start up again between Catholicism and some of the other Christian denominations, it's
sort of like the Tower of Babel.
It just seems that this turmoil, we're seeing cracks in this whole concept that we thought we had, where we could live in this delusional, state of being in which somehow or another no one had to lay down religious principles. We could all just be absolved neutral of them, or the religious principles were so apparent that we could all somehow or another tacitly, without coming out and saying so, agree upon them. It seems that that's coming to an end, and it's difficult for people to deal with it. And I think Cardinal Chaput here understands that, but at the same time cannot quite pull himself out of the belief that John Courtney Murray was right. In fact, he goes on to say that. On the one hand, here is R.R. Reno in First Things saying, we are doing some rethinking at First Things about John Courtney Murray. Maybe he was too sanguine about the congeniality of the American Project of Catholicism. And Cardinal Chaput is, in effect, saying, on the other hand, that he still believes, he says, I don't think the American founding was predetermined to turn out the way it has. On the one hand, you know, he's criticizing what's going on, but he's saying, I don't think it was predetermined to turn out that way. He says, even when a blueprint is flawed, he says, maybe their original blueprint was flawed a little bit, but we it could be fixed. He goes, so I've always admired the work of Father John Courtney Murray. You see, he's admiring the work of John Courtney Murray. He says he could be very critical of America's flaws, but he believed the founding had room for God, and therefore Catholics and other Christians could shape the American experience toward the good. Well, Catholics and other Christians, but what if Catholics and other Christians disagree? And we're finding that here, again, with this Protestant disagreeing with R.R. Reno. I mean, this is getting confusing, isn't it?
Certainly is.
And my whole point is that confusion.
It shouldn't be that confusing.
But my whole point is I think that confusion is coming about because we have believed in a principle that simply hasn't been true, and that principle is that somehow or another it's possible to separate the church and the state, and somehow it's possible to have religious freedom. And that's what people keep going back to. If we could just get back to our religious freedom, if we could just get back to our founding principles, but maybe those principles are inherently flawed, always were flawed, and we just didn't see it because we happened to be lucky enough to be living in a little lull in history where all Christians believed alike enough so that for a while the state could go along passing laws that basically conform to Christianity without too much thinking about it. And that period is over.
Now what?
Now what is we have to deal with this.
Well, we're going to have to go. I know you don't like this saying, go back to, but we do have to return back to our original beliefs and dogma and so forth and stick with it.
Of the dogma of the Catholic Church?
Of the Church.
Okay, I understand that. No, I believe that. But the fact is I don't think most secularists are going to believe that, and there will be a lot of Protestants that will be concerned about that. The fact is Christianity is fractured. And so how can we stand against the state if the state becomes a religion, which I'm saying in the first place, it couldn't get away from it any more than anybody else. Although it still pretends, at least there are even believes and thinks, that it's not religious, that its laws somehow or another stand outside of religion, and so therefore its laws should be obeyed, and all Christian laws or any kind of so-called religious laws should be set aside. But the fact is I'm saying that's not possible. So Mary Eberhardt, again, in this, want to get to that, she has a whole article on the secular religion, that secularism has turned into a religion. But really, has it turned into it, or was it always that? Or is it simply the idea that anything is a religion because it's not possible to get away from it? If human beings are religious creatures, then any time that they articulate any kind of principle, says do this or don't do that, or this is good or that is bad, those are religious principles, and any laws backing them up are going to be religious laws. Can we get away from it, is what I'm trying to say. We thought we had, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Then how do we resolve it? I don't know.
I don't either.
I know that the Catholic...
I think we're going to have to do a lot of praying.
The Catholic, that's a good point. The Catholic Church...
Maybe it's one of those things that's out of our hands at this point, that we should put back in the hands of God and pray and have Him send the Holy Spirit and show us, give us some direction.
That I agree with that. But the secularists would not agree with that.
No, but
they would pretend
you
that they
can do it.
They would say, we don't want to be religion. We want freedom from religion. And the minute that they said we want freedom from religion, that's a religious principle. they don't understand that there's no possible escape from religion either. They don't understand that there's no escape. My answer to this right now, we're going to have to close here pretty soon, is this. We are going to have to face up to the fact, including the secularists. And if the secularists won't face that fact, then we as a Christian believers have to assert it, you know, to them anyway. There is no escape from religion. There is no escape from our human nature. There's no escape from the fact that all laws have to be based on religious principles. And we are going to have to resolve that. Somebody's religious principles are going to have to prevail. At one time, we had a unified authority. That was the Catholic Church, the Pope, and the Magisterium. And there wasn't any problem along those respects because all of secularism, all of the, you know, these so-called secular society, which wouldn't have been called secular at that time. Secular is a very, very new word. It wasn't even invented until modern times, fairly recently. But at that time, it would have been simply understood that the princes and the state, the civil rulers, would have had to base their laws on Christian, that is Catholic, principles as articulated by the Pope and the Magisterium of the Catholic Church. And that would have been unified throughout all of Christendom, which at that time was Europe. Europe came into existence as Christendom. And Christendom would have had uniform religious principles underlying all the laws. And that was broken up and changed with this invention of secularism and this idea that somehow this church and state could be separate, and it's not working.
No, it's not. Like I say, we're going to have to put our hands in the in God's hands, put ourselves in God's hands, our country in God's hands, and pray a lot, ask for guidance, and in doing so, it's the only way you can find a way out of this. And let's say our closing prayer.
St. Michael the Archangel, defend us in battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him who humbly pray. And do thou, Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, thrust into hell Satan and all evil spirits who wander through the world for the ruin of souls. Amen. And boy, we need those prayers now. At any rate, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Being Catholic with Bob Johnston on Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5. If you'd like to contact Bob, email bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Again, that's bob@catholicspiritradio.com. Catholic Spirit Radio relies on your support to bring programming like this and EWTN to Central Illinois 24 hours a day. Please help keep Catholic Spirit Radio on the air with your generous support. Donate online at catholicspiritradio.com. Or send a donation to Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. That's Catholic Spirit Radio, 108 Boykins Place, Normal, Illinois, 61761. Catholic Spirit Radio is a 501c3, and all donations are tax deductible. Thank you for your support of Catholic Spirit Radio 89.5.